Consolidated case numbers 19-5483, 19-5550, and 19-5551. Hanover American Insurance Company versus Tattooed Millionaire et al. In arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side in 19-5483. Cases 19-5550 and 19-5551 to be submitted on the briefs. Mr. Futhi, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Malcolm Futhi, and I'm counsel for John Falls, the appellant in the first lawsuit. I've asked to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, and I'd like to do that this time again. Thank you. This case concerns the fire that occurred former Hasta Blues Music Studio in Memphis, and the insurance claims that were filed. John Falls, the appellant in this, received a jury verdict in his favor. However, after the trial court set aside the jury verdict based on Hanover Insurance Company's Rule 50B motion. That order was wrong for 5 reasons. First, Hanover had never made the requisite Rule 50B motion before the case was submitted to the jury. Second, Hanover had never raised the commercial general liability endorsement at any point in the lawsuit until after the jury verdict came back. Third, the district court didn't follow the proper standard for a Rule 50B and did not construe the evidence in Falls' favor as he should have. Four, Hanover's own adjuster, Gary Bartman, admitted at trial that Brown and CME were not insureds under Falls' policy and that only Falls could void his commercial property coverage. And the fifth error is that if you review the policy language itself, it doesn't allow for a cancellation or termination of the commercial property coverage based upon actions of the commercial general liability additional insured under the separate endorsement. These are 5 issues, and Falls really only needs to win on any one in order for the order to be reversed and the jury verdict reinstated. Just as a few points on the background, John Falls and Chris Brown were not buddies. These guys were not friends. They were at best cordial rivals. John Falls had been successful in the music industry beforehand as the lead singer of Egypt Central. He had worked with Jason Flom and Warner Music Group, and his band had averaged about $3 million a year. He had 5 songs on the Billboard Top 20, and it was these connections that Chris Brown needed in order to help jumpstart his music studio. And they had a mutual acquaintance that introduced them that suggested that. By the way, I don't think the court clock is working. It's not showing any time, but anyway. That is how Falls and Brown got together. Falls did not have any knowledge of any of the false documents that Chris Brown had created. Falls was shocked and blown away when he found out that there were false documents. And the way he found out was he was served with Hanover's complaint. Now, as far as that, there is one preliminary issue, the jurisdictional issue that Hanover has raised. I believe the Ray Hallett case is directly on point on that, and Falls would rest on his briefs unless there are any questions from the panel. I'd be glad to answer any questions regarding jurisdictional issues if there are any. Well, with regard to the first error, it's an absolute rule that a party has to raise a Rule 50A motion before a 50B motion can be renewed after the verdict. And that's exactly what should have happened in this case, and there was an opportunity to do it. At the close of Hanover's case in chief, the district court told the attorneys, quote, "I know you need to make the Rule 50A motions." And he also said, "I want you to be really careful." He also said that although we could reserve them at that time, there needed to be a more thorough presentation later on. And at that point, when Hanover closed his case in chief, that wasn't the time for Hanover to even raise a Rule 58 motion. That was the time for the defendants to raise motion. So there really wasn't much reserved that Hanover needed to reserve at that point. After the close of all evidence, the court revisited the issue and gave the parties an opportunity to raise their Rule 58 motions. Chris Brown and TME raised motions. Hanover even raised a motion. He raised a motion under 50A as to Chris Brown and TME. Hanover had no 50A motion whatsoever as to John Falls. Based on that, Hanover has waived any opportunity to assert a Rule 50D motion, and that should kill any post-trial motion there. Now, Hanover has tried to argue that because it's a purely legal argument that they can raise it, and Hanover has cited the Daugherty case. But the Daugherty case doesn't support that suggestion at all. If you read the Daugherty case, the Rule 50A motion was actually asserted in that case. The city defendant raised the Rule 50A motion, but failed to raise a Rule 50B motion. It's totally different from what we have here. It's completely an opposite, and there's actually a district court case, SEC versus Jacobs. It goes through an analysis that explains why it doesn't. Now, Daugherty does not apply in a circumstance such as here. Additionally,
yeah, counsel, yes, sir. This is Judge Boggs. You have a lot of issues. Let me, in little time, let me jump forward to a question that I had. When you get to the, if we get to the substance of it, and you have, I know you have some other points. If you get to the substance, did Hanover argue at trial that Brown's fraud impacted Falls? Did they ask the jury to impute Brown's actions to Falls?
No, Your Honor, absolutely not. And the jury instructions actually told the jury to consider each defendant's misrepresentations or representations with regard to his own policy. So the jury instructions actually precluded any opportunity for Hanover to do that. There's no indication that I saw that Hanover was trying to suggest that TME's misrepresentations could in any way avoid false policies. If anything, they had to show that Falk himself had knowledge of the false documents, which he did not, and the jury found that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Going to the second point, the commercial general liability endorsement upon which Hanover now relies had never been mentioned before the jury verdict came back. It's not in the complaint. It's not in the pretrial order. It's not in the summary judgment. It appeared nowhere. It came, I would say it came from beyond left field. It came from the parking lot beyond left field after the jury verdict came back. I had no idea that they were going to assert this. And on top of that, they never referred to TME or Brown as an additional insured at any point. The pleadings, the summary judgment motion, all refer to Brown and TME as a loss payee. So there is no indication at all that there would ever be this argument raised. And on top of that, related to the fourth error, Gary Barkman was the adjuster for Hanover. And he testified at trial that, one, TME and Brown were not insurers under Falls' policy. And two, that only Falls could void the coverage part for the property coverage. That was the testimony that Barkman gave. Now, whether that's a judicial admission or an evidentiary admission, that was uncontroverted. Those were the facts of the case that went to the jury. And there was no evidence or indication otherwise from Hanover at any point before the verdict came back that they would be arguing otherwise. The third
counsel,
point, yes.
Go ahead. Are you finished with that?
Yes, sir.
Would you address briefly the matter of the recovery that went to Falls would partially go to Brown, and that that wasn't right?
Yes, sir. So I think that goes to the public policy argument. First of all, the public policy argument was never raised in a Rule 50A motion. It shouldn't be considered. Second, it was never raised in a pretrial conference. It was a new issue that came up post-trial after the verdict. But as to where the money goes, the way, this is what Barkman testified, what would happen would be Hanover would write a check to TME and to Falls. And at that point, according to Hanover, it was of no concern what happened. Now, Falls is of the position that a substantial majority of it should go to Falls because he had a lease that was ongoing and he was the one who had monetized the equipment. And we actually have an admission from Chris Brown that Falls should receive a substantial majority of it. Now, it's not completely resolved, and I do have a declaratory action petition drafted, but I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, so I haven't filed anything yet. But I would anticipate the money would go into escrow and that it would have to be resolved in a separate lawsuit. And this issue couldn't be addressed in this lawsuit, and the judge wouldn't let us. At one point, the question came up, what happens to the money? The judge said, don't talk about it. Go sue yourselves. And that's exactly what I anticipate happening. So we couldn't raise issue in this case. And I anticipate we have other lawsuits. There are other lawsuits pending anyway.
The short answer is you realize that there has to be another look taken to the division of these proceeds as it went to Falls.
Yes, sir. Definitely. And if any money is going to Chris Brown, there would be other people who would have to, it'd have to be interpled, I would believe.
That is, Hanover could also say if anything went to Brown, it ought to come back to us because it's a result of his fraud.
Yes, sir. And whether they're having whether they have the creditor hat on as a judgment creditor, or whether they're abusing them or arguing based on other grounds, they could have that argument with Brown. But, as to the third point, the Rule 50B standard requires discarding all countervailing evidence against Falls and taking the strongest legitimate view in favor of Falls and making all reasonable inferences in his favor. The evidence in this case does not suggest that TME committed fraud as to Falls. First of all, there's never a suggestion that TME made any representations regarding Falls to BI. So that doesn't count. Now, there's no doubt that the equipment existed. We had hundreds of photographs. There was an initial inspection by Ethan Gladney before the policy was ever issued. And Ethan Gladney, for Hanover, found that there was equipment there sufficient to issue the policies. Also, the jury found that there was no fraud in the application. Thank you. Furthermore, the purchase receipts, although they were false, Falls had what was called a replacement value policy. Now, under a replacement value policy, it's not a question of what you paid for. The question is how much it costs to replace it. According to Bartman at trial, he said the price of the equipment just doesn't matter. What matters is what is the current market value and does it exist? And of course, the primary issue is whether Falls knew that any of the receipts were false. Falls had no idea that any of these receipts were false until he was served with a complaint from Hanover. Also, the jury instruction, as I mentioned earlier, just did not allow for a crossover finding as to whether Brown had committed any fraud as to Falls. Fifth, looking at the policy, if you go into the merits of the policy, the CGL endorsement says it applies only to the general liability parts. And if you read the terms of it, it says it only modifies the CGL coverage, and it only applies with respect to liability for bodily injury. Same thing with the commercial property conditions form. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Red means stops. I apologize.
No, that's okay. You have the rest of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Jeremy Grable on behalf of Hanover Insurance Company. I just wanted to start, frankly, by thanking the court for its accommodation of these arguments by video. I know I appreciate that, and I'm sure all the attorneys appreciate that, so thank you for that. Just briefly on jurisdiction, before I address the merits of Mr. Falls' arguments, we did raise this issue of whether this court has appellate jurisdiction in a motion before the briefing, and the motions panel referred that to Your Honors. We think that this case, because the district judge bifurcated the trial under Rule 42, there will be a Phase 2 trial, which will address our non-insurance proceed damages. So things like the expenses we incurred, adjusting the claims before the fraud was uncovered. We think that goes far beyond the limited exception for attorney's fees that the Supreme Court recognized in the Ray Haluch case the counsel mentioned. And again, this is not a situation like in that case where we're saying that the appellant was late and therefore is out of luck. We actually think they're early and that we should finish all of the issues and then we come up in one appeal to this court. But again, if unless there are any questions, we would also rely on our briefing on the jurisdictional issue. You know, I'm based in New Orleans, Louisiana, and our local court is the Fifth Circuit. And the late Judge John R. Brown once famously described an appellant's arguments as too fast and too fine. And frankly, I think that description applies to these Rule 50 arguments that Mr. Falls is raising. If you look at the trial transcript, Judge McCullough was clear at every stage of the trial. This case was going to the jury. He did not want to entertain Rule 50 motions. At the close of our case in chief, there are multiple statements, again, cited in our brief, that the judge was recognizing that all Rule 50A motions would be preserved. He would take them under advisement. He said things like, they present interesting questions, but we're going to go to the jury. And
counsel, saying they're preserved doesn't necessarily imply they don't have to be made. That addresses more as to when he might rule on them, but it doesn't foreclose the necessity of making the motion.
Well, I understand that, Judge. And so that was the first time they were discussed at the close of our case in chief. At the close of the defendant's case in chief, the close of all the evidence, there was another sort of renewed discussion of Rule 50 motions. And again, the judge made clear that he was not entertaining any of those. He would take them all under advisement and that the case was going to the jury. And particularly with the defendant's motions, we did make a specific Rule 50A motion at the close of all of the evidence. And it was based on Mr. Brown's fraud. We had filed a summary judgment motion earlier in the case, arguing that the evidence was clear that Mr. Brown had committed insurance fraud and made material misrepresentations. That obviously is the predicate of our legal argument regarding Mr. Brown's fraud voiding Mr. Falls's coverage. So we made the predicate motion at the close of all the evidence. We argued to the judge that the evidence was clear, Mr. Brown had committed insurance fraud. Judge McCullough said, that's a very interesting argument. I think you have a significant argument in that respect, and it's something I'm certainly going to be taking a look at, but this case is going to the jury. So what Mr. Falls is arguing is that after that development, instead of sitting down and saying, thank you very much, Judge, we should have said, well, I know you're not going to rule on that predicate issue, but if you were to rule on that predicate issue, it would void Falls' policy. Right? That is where you get into an overly technical interpretation of Rule 50. This court's cases, including a decision we actually did not cite in our briefing, Boynton versus TRW, a 1988 decision, makes clear, and Judge White, you've written on this recently, Rule 50 is supposed to be interpreted liberally, flexibly, and we don't insist on sort of a slavish adherence to the procedural requirements once the court has taken a motion under advisement.
Well, counsel, as a practical matter, though, one of the reasons for making a 50A motion is so the other side knows what's at issue and can respond to it both legally and practically. I asked your colleague whether you had argued to the jury anything about the interaction between Brown's fraud and Falls's, and they said no. Is that accurate as to what happened at trial?
That's right, Judge, because this was a legal issue. And if you look at the pretrial order, it's page 7432 of the record. Legal issue number 26, disputed legal issue, whether fraud committed by individuals other than Falls can void Falls's policy. Again, this was raised in summary judgment. It was carved out in the pretrial order. It's a legal issue. And Judge Boggs, you wrote on this in K&T Enterprises. This was a case 25 years ago. You remember the arson of the Dairy Queen?
I remember it very well. Can fire be the enemy of ice cream? But in any event, you referred to it as legal issue number 26 at some earlier stage. But again, isn't one of the purposes of 50A to make you put your best cards on the table, not to say we've raised 26 or more issues earlier?
It's a legal issue, Judge. And again, that's the reason I reference your prior decision is because you recognize and the courts recognize that Rule 50 gives the trial judge an opportunity one last opportunity to issue the judgment that the law requires. So the jury, this was not an issue for the jury. Once Judge McCullough said that he was sending the issue of Brown's fraud to the jury, this argument that we're making now is predicated on that factual issue. And once that factual issue goes to the jury, then it is left to the trial court, or this court, frankly, to resolve that legal issue. What is the legal impact of the jury's finding as to Brown? And on the merits, under
So your position is that any fraud by Brown would void Falls's coverage, that there's no factual matter of what the impact of a particular piece of fraud would be on his particular monetary claims?
No, it's a little more specific than that, Judge. The fraud provision is on page 174 of the appendix. And contrary to counsel's statement, this provision appears in the summary judgment motion. Again, it appears multiple times in the record.
But this also appears in the CGL coverage, is that right?
No, this is a commercial property. This is the policy has two coverage parts.
Yeah.
Property coverage.
I just mean the page that you're referencing. I know there are two parts. The page that you're referencing is from the property coverage?
It is. It's a commercial property condition. I think the point the counsel was making is that TME and Mr. Brown are additional insureds only on the CGL coverage. But under this commercial property fraud provision, that doesn't matter. And as Judge McCullough correctly held, this provision says that the commercial property coverage is void if you or any other insured makes a misrepresentation of a material fact concerning this coverage part or a claim under this coverage part. And that is a very specific finding. That is the finding that the jury made as to Brown, that Mr. Brown made material misrepresentations under this coverage part. So it's not just that Brown generally committed fraud. It's that Mr. Brown admitted before the jury. I mean, it's an incredible case of insurance fraud. He admitted that he falsified these documents and submitted them to Hanover and caused us to pay almost $3 million to these guys before we uncovered their scheme. That the jury had no trouble finding that Mr. Brown did that. And as a matter of law, that's our important point. As a matter of law, that finding voids the Falls coverage. And Judge McCullough didn't think we had waived anything. He entertained the motion and he granted it. If he had thought we had waived it, he wouldn't have granted our motion. Briefly, on the point about Mr. Barkman's testimony, if you go to the record on that, page 8034 of the record, it's part of the trial transcript at record document 315. There was about whether there are any other named insureds on the Falls policy. And Barkman truthfully testified that no, there are not. Our point is that Mr. Brown is an additional insured, which is sufficient to trigger that fraud provision. So again, it's a matter of law. It doesn't even matter what Mr. Barkman would have said about this. You just look at the language of the contract. But in any event, that testimony is not as clear as counsel makes it out to be. Again, at the end of the day, this court's decisions have made clear that when a court is going to send a matter to the jury, that's when we take a step back and we look at the overall purpose of Rule 50, which is to make sure that everyone has a fair day in court in the quest for truth. And there's no question in this case that those standards have been satisfied, particularly when you overlay on that this is a legal issue. So all of the arguments that Falls makes about the sufficiency of the evidence, they simply do not apply. And we would ask the court to affirm Judge McCullough's amended judgment and post-trial ruling in full. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Got to unmute it, sorry. With regard to the points that Hanover has made, the judge clarified at the end, at the close of Hanover's case, he said, quote, I know you need to make these motions, end quote. He also said, quote, you want to be really careful, end quote. He also said, you need to give, quote, a more thorough presentation, end quote. If you look at the trial transcript, record entry 356 at page ID 9303, and record entry 356-1 at page ID 9366, that's where the quotations are found. He also, at the end of all evidence, allowed the parties to make a more formal statement. Those were his words, more formal statement. Hanover only made the motion as to Brown and TME. Also, Hanover did not make it based upon the policy's terms. It was based upon the Tennessee fraud statute. So Hanover can now not expand its 50A motion to include the policy terms itself. It was strictly the statutory claim, which was a separate question and claim. Additionally, whenever I was speaking to Bartman, Hanover brought up the Bartman questions. Whenever I was speaking to Bartman, I specifically prefaced it with discussion of the commercial property conditions. So it was in the context of discussing that particular form that Bartman said only Falls's actions or fraud can void his property coverage. From that point on, that's how the trial proceeded. There was no suggestion that anyone other than Falls could void Falls's coverage. Additionally, Mr. Grable keeps referring to the scheme. Again, these guys weren't friends. They weren't buddies. Falls had no idea that any of these documents were false until he was served with a complaint. So for Hanover to keep trying to lump Falls back in with Brown is inappropriate, Your Honor. Your Honor, this case was submitted to the jury. We obtained a jury verdict. And there were all of these issues were not raised until post-verdict. And it feels as though Hanover is trying not only to change the rules of the game, but to change the game itself completely by bringing up totally new legal issues that I had no notice of. So, Your Honor, for those reasons, I would request that the court reverse the decision of the trial court and enter an order remanding it with instructions to re-enter the jury verdict as was awarded by the jury. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you both. The case will be submitted.